Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Hey, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I want to start off, apologizing for yesterday's show. Somehow they were doing some upgrading and their site, actually the website was down. And not all of us on Block Talk Radio could not air the episode yesterday. So I apologize to all of those who tuned in to listen, but got nothing, put it that way. Tuned in to listen, but got nothing. Right. So we're back on the air and I'm going to book another show, create another episode for Friday, since I didn't do the one for Monday because of technical difficulties on the part of Block Talk Radio itself. So welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. WTTTY on Block Talk Radio. It is a great day, folks. It's the day after the debate, and everybody's talking about the day after the debate. And obviously, I'm going to talk about it too, because you know I'm going to give my little 2 cents. it may not mean much, but I'm going to give my 2 cents like I always do. My guest today will be Iris Barrett. Okay, yeah, as you probably know, I have a really, really bad time with names. So if she should come on to the show today, she will tell me the correct way to pronounce it. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I hope all is well wherever you are, whatever you're doing, as long as it's something positive, because we always want to stress positive on this show. And this show is all about making the world a better place. And that's all it's about, making the world a better place. And Donald Trump will not make the world a better place. This guy is totally, totally unfit for president. But you got so many people out there who are saying that, you know, I mean, we all saw the debate. Most of us saw the debate. Over 80 million, I think it's 80 million people plus saw the debate. And 80 million people have their own opinion of the debate. Majority of the people felt that Hillary Clinton, including myself, won the debate. 67%, I believe, to 20, something like that. And then there's those undecided votes And if you're undecided, I mean, you're just probably one of those crazy people, because if you don't know who you're going to vote for by now, then you probably will not vote, or you probably just make up your mind as you walk into the booth on voting day. And it was an exciting. Donald Trump never, he never disappoints. I think he lost the debate. I think he was a bully. I thought he was just a total asshole, interrupting Hillary over 30 times. That's crazy. And then he just starts rambling and becoming incoherent, you know, and now he's on the back on the campaign trail acting if none of that happened, or he's trying to cover his ass on the campaign trail for doing such an awful job in the debate. From my understanding, Donald Trump did not show up prepared for the debate. He did not think he needed to be prepared for it, so he decided to wing it, and he failed miserably. He failed, and there's some people are saying that maybe he may not show up for the debate on, I believe it's October 9th. A lot of people have said it was October 4th, but it's just been confirmed to be October 9th from Hillary Clinton herself. And I saw the whole debate, folks, and I was just up in arms at Donald Trump. I'm thinking the guy is going to be mellow. He's going to know what he's talking about. He's going to come off being presidential. None of those things happened. He was a bully. he was a blowhard. He was lying again, once again. And he just failed at this. And I think he knew that he didn't do a good job. But his supporters, his diehard voters, they are saying that he won the debate. And then you got a few people who are out. Young people are saying he won the debate. Are these people nuts? Probably they are. I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, if you watch the debate, how can you say that Donald Trump won this? Donald Trump made a fool out of himself. Donald Trump shot himself in the foot. Donald Trump is awful. He didn't talk about issues. He had no substance. He just rambled, and rambled on. I am not a big Hillary Clinton fan. She was for TPP. There's no doubt about it. The only reason why she changed her mind on TPP, because the majority of Americans were against it. They were against it. And she was running for president, so she changed her mind. Our President Obama, I mean, he is for this disastrous trade deal. I mean, he's pushing it. He's with the Republicans on this. So was Hillary, until she got the pulse of Americans. Then she changed her mind. There's no doubt about that. So I'm not a great big old Hillary fan, you know, but I would, if I had a choice between Hillary and Trump, there's no doubt about it. I would want to see Hillary in the Oval Office, in the White House, because she has more experience. She's more poised at doing a better job. Donald Trump, if this guy was voted into office, he would be the same person that we see on stage, as we've been hearing about for months and years. He would be the same guy. I mean, he would change his mind so rapidly. I suppose he was meeting with world leaders and he had a decision to make on foreign policy. He would just wing it. And that's no way to do. You got to go to the, you can't wing it. It's like going to a job interview and not preparing for a job interview. If you don't prepare for a job interview, and which an ordinary job interview, you're not going to get that job. Donald Trump did not prepare for this job interview. And he blew it big time. But there are still people out there who want to hire him. He was wrong on everything. He was incoherent. He was inarticulate. he was just all over the place. He looked at mean and angry at times. And he looked at if he didn't know what the hell he was going to say. Then he started rambling. He was just reaching for anything out of the blue, out of the air, from the air, just to say. He was reaching for anything he could say. He was bashing Hillary, attacking her. I've heard him call someone fat, Miss Piggy. And then he said something about someone weighing 400 pounds sitting in their bed on the computer, 400 pounds. I said, then he mentions Rosie O'Donnell. He mentions Sean Hannity, all of these, you know, people. He was dropping names left and right, not realizing that 80 million to 100,000 people were watching. And he made a big fool of himself. But you've got some people out there that are going to vote for him. I mean, they are going to vote for him. I think the majority of people are not going to do that. I think he lost the women's votes. He lost the women votes. He doesn't have the African-American vote. He doesn't have the Hispanic vote. He doesn't have much votes at all. He has young, angry, pissed off white men votes. You know, people who are pissed off, people who are thinking that Donald Trump is a different kind of a politician. He doesn't have to be articulate. He doesn't have to be informed. He doesn't have to know everything. He's just different. They feel that he's just different from any other politician ever, and they're going to vote for him because he's different. I heard some young lady called him compassionate and warm. He may be compassionate and warm, but he's not fit for the White House. You know, that's what I think, and that's what a lot of other people think. And totally, Hillary won this thing hands down. I mean, all on social media, people are saying, majority of the people on social media are saying that Donald Trump actually made a fool of himself. He made things worse. And there's something on Facebook saying that, not on Facebook, but other social media websites also, they're saying Donald Trump's said the reason why, I'm just quoting now, this is allegedly because it hasn't been proven, but it's all kind of things on social website about Donald Trump. Allegedly, someone posted a comment saying that Donald Trump knew he lost the debate and he blamed losing the debate on a defective microphone. Now, I don't know if that's true, but it may not be true because there is no other credible media outlet saying that. But I'm just saying there's all kinds of things on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn that's, you know, making things up about Donald Trump because he gave such an awful performance last night. But hey, wow, there's two more debates. So he can always this time prepare for the debate. You know, he messed up this time. He knows it. And now he's running around the media, jumping on television, making videos, trying to defend himself. But there's no defending this. He was totally awful. He lost the debate. And, you know, we're asking, what do you think about the first debate? I mean, do you think he won? Do you think he lost? That's up to you. 347-857-1762. My guest is author Iris Barrett. She's going to be on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Will she be talking about this subject? I really don't know. But I do know that she seems like a very, very nice person. And this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we're talking about the first debate of Clinton and Trump and who won. I actually think that Hillary won. But, you know, you can make your own inference on who won. All right. This show is about making the world a better place. We're here to educate, inspire, and empower and inform. That's what the George Wilder Jr. Show is all about. Let's see what we got here. And we will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. We got that clip. Oh, okay. Here we go.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Yeah, they're now saying that Donald Trump bombs on the Ultimate Reality Show. I'm guessing that they mean the debate, the first debate. Yeah, he bombs. He bombs big time. But you really can't tell his supporters that. They will not go for that. They will, you know, I mean, they have been called everything. Majority of Donald Trump's supporters are white. White, angry. White men. Lester Holt, he's getting the moderator for the debate. He's getting criticized. I'm going to criticize him too, because I thought that he actually lost control of the debate. Donald Trump just steamrolled right over him. I mean, when you're a moderator of a debate, you're supposed to have control over it. And he didn't do any fact checking. And I was surprised to learn that Lester Holt, the moderator, he's a Republican. He just looks as though he's could be probably a Democrat, but he is a Republican. I'm thinking he's a Republican that's not for Donald Trump. You know, so I can't wait for the second debate, because I'm pretty sure Donald Trump is going to prepare. He's going to be polished this time, maybe, hopefully. And he's going to look at his mistakes, his big whopper mistakes that cost him this debate. And hopefully he will make a lot of changes, because he need a lot of changes. If he should go into this debate being Donald Trump, then we can forget it. Okay, we have a few clips from the presidential debate last night. And it's pretty long. This is a long clip, so I'm just going to play as much as I can. And I don't think I'm going to play the whole thing. It's over 10 minutes long, so we're going to do a little bit of this clip, and we're going to come back with a little bit of commentary. All right, here we go.
In the Middle East, we could have rebuilt our country twice, and it's really a shame. And it's politicians like Secretary Clinton that have caused this problem. Our country has tremendous problems. We're a debtor nation, we're a serious debtor nation, and we have a country that needs new roads, new tunnels, new bridges, new airports, new schools, new hospitals. And we don't have the money because it's been squandered on so many of your ideas.
Let you and respond maybe and we'll
because
next...
you haven't paid any federal income tax for a lot of years. And the other thing I think is important.
It would be squandered too, believe me.
If your main claim to be president of the United States is your business, then I think we should talk about that. You know, your campaign manager said that you built a lot of businesses on the backs of little guys. And indeed, I have met a lot of the people who were stiffed by you and your businesses, Donald. I've met dishwashers, painters, architects, glass installers, marble installers, drapery installers, like my dad was, who you refused to pay when they finished the work that you asked them to do. We have an architect in the audience who designed one of your clubhouses at one of your golf courses. Okay. It's a beautiful facility. It immediately was put to use, and you wouldn't pay what the man needed to be paid, what he was charging you.
Maybe he didn't do a good job, and I was unsatisfied with his work, which our country should do too.
The thousands of people that you have stiffed over the course of your business not deserve some kind of apology from someone who has taken their labor, taken the goods that they produced, and then refused to pay them? I can only say that I'm certainly relieved that my late father never did business with you. He provided a good middle-class life for us, but the people he worked for He expected the bargain to be kept on both sides. And when we talk about your business, you've taken business bankruptcy six times. There are a lot of great business people that have never taken bankruptcy once. You call yourself the king of debt. You talk about leverage. You even at one time suggested that you would try to negotiate down the national debt of the United States. Well, sometimes there's not a direct transfer of skills from business to government, but sometimes what happened in business would be really bad for government.
That's what Mr.
And
Trump
said. So, yeah, I think it's very clear about that.
Look, it's all words. It's all sound bites. I built an unbelievable company. Some of the greatest assets anywhere in the world.
Okay, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That's just a little bit of what went on the other night, and we have more coming up, so stay tuned. Let's keep it right here, WTTY Chicago. It is a great day in the city of Chicago. The summer is going away. The days are getting shorter, but we're going to have to really, really, and it's getting kind of cold. I admit it's kind of cold out there today, but hey, wow, it's fall. We had a great summer, and we just got to look forward for the next summer, next year, 2017. That's got to be something. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, sweetheart. It's Iris calling with Anonymous Expressions.
Wow. Welcome to the show. And we've been conversing for quite a while through emails, and you finally made it to the show. I'm glad you're here. And go right ahead. Tell us something about yourself. What do you do? And why should we care?
Oh, thank you so much. So my business is anonymousexpressions.com, and I offer several really important things. First, a little bit about myself. When I was a young child, I had a really big open heart, and I always really loved and appreciated people. And so I found myself writing these sweet, thoughtful little notes and giving them to people. And it was important to be anonymous because it wasn't about me. It was about the message. It was about appreciating people. And I would find lonely people or handicapped people and lift their spirits. And that was wonderful. And so I have these great honoring awards that can lift people's spirits, which are great. As I evolved and became a young adult, I realized that being anonymous was also very, very important for calling people on the carpet with unwanted behaviors. So actually, I've always been sort of a visionary, being able to look at what's possible, and I've always been very practical looking at what gets results. And I've seen a lot of what's happened to a lot of different whistleblowers, whether that's in corporate, you know, land or government or even just in personal lives. It's very sad to me that people have to get thrown under the bus for telling the truth. So on my website, people can send me a letter that they want to send to someone that tells their emotional truth, whatever that is. And frankly, the very first ones I started sending, I had a group of friends in my late 20s who were terrible gossips, you know, petty gossips. So I found this fabulous poem called The Snake That Poisons Everyone about gossip. And I sent it anonymously to several of my friends. Well, because they didn't know who sent it, it had that much more power. It wasn't like, oh, that's Iris, you know, that's her thing. They had no idea.
Okay.
And I'll tell you
they
what,
didn't know
it,
who you
I watched. Exactly. I send it anonymously. And I send it in a poem format so that, you know, it didn't have a lot of my personal energy in it. And I'm telling you what, it really changed their behavior. They stopped their petty, stupid gossip. And I have all of these really fun, sassy awards that tell the truth. Go ahead.
Do you think they would have had a different reaction to that poem if they knew who you were?
Oh, absolutely. You know, they would have gone, oh, that's Iris, you know, and she's the real responsible one, or she's the, you know, more conscientious one, or I think they would have really written me off. And it's like a lot of these different awards that are really funny, they're kind of, they're sassy. When people don't know who who sent the award, it has a much greater impact. Because everybody that they look at, they have to wonder, you know, are you the person that's calling me on my gossip, or are you the person that sent me something really kind? You know, it really has a very transformative effect. So if you want, I'd love to give you some of the titles of some of these sassy awards that have been really beneficial. And then if you want me to actually read the award, you can stop me and let me know. How does that sound?
You can go right ahead.
Okay. So
you got it.
These are the sassy awards that I have.
Okay.
Beneficial
right.
Bullshitter. Cantankerous Old Coot. Coercive Coworker. Conscientious Couch Potato. Dastardly Dirty Old Man. And that one comes in real handy sometimes around the office. Drama Queen of the Universe. Very super popular. Very funny. Works for gay men and women alike, quite honestly. Heinous Anus, Judgmental Jackass, Lord of the Dance, Master of Con Artistry, that's a real popular one. Mindless Moocher, boy, that's a popular one, especially when you can't get those damn kids to move on and get out of the house. Morbid Martyrdom, that's a popular one. Passionate Pack Rat. This one's kind of an honoring award, but it's also really funny. It's called the Profound Pedagogue of Honor, sent oftentimes to teachers and professors. It's kind of cute. Rebel Without a Clue, very popular.
Oh, yeah.
And probably one of my most honestly popular sassy awards is Religious Sermonizer. I think we should read that one. What do you think?
It's up to you. If you think that's the most popular one, you can read it. But I want to say, as you gave a litany of that, it sounds like you having a great time with that, doing that. It sounds like you really enjoy what you're doing.
You know, it's really fun. And to me, it's all about telling the truth to people in a way that they can get it. See, that's the practical side of me. The visionary part of me says, you know, hey, what is possible is... It's like when the voice of the universe speaks because you don't know who sent it to you, it really gets people's attention. There's a strong focus on the message. But the practical side says, you know, let's have some fun. Let's be lighthearted. Let's get the message across without being a total jerk. So it is fun.
And what I do is fun. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it. And everything that I do, it has something to do with making someone's life a lot better.
Absolutely. And the honoring awards are really fabulous. I mean, I've got all kinds of those too. But I like the fact that, you know, you're really open to looking at all different aspects of, you know, anonymous giving or anonymous telling of the truth.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd share both the sassy part and the honoring part.
Okay. You can read the other part, the one that you think is the most popular. You can read it on the show.
Okay, well, this one's kind of fun. You know, everybody has one of those neighbors that just cannot get over being a religious sermonizer. And it says, Religious Sermonizer Award, presented to you-know-who, and I send them out customized with the person's name. And it says, We hereby choose to grant you this Religious Sermonizer Award, as your proselytizing makes us really bored. Your holier-than-thou attitude gets in the way of our gratitude. We know you are upset about our obvious transgressions. Well, we are sick of your sinful projections. We are not afraid of sin.
Rhymes.
We already feel born again. Please limit your sermons to church once and for all, for the rest of us are out having a ball. Presented by Anonymous Expressions. So as you can see, they're funny. They're cute, but they still get the point across.
Yeah. I never heard of Anonymous Expressions, but you send out these invitations or these little sayings, and nobody know who you are. So you're not really trying to advertise yourself.
Absolutely not. Now, I've written some great ebooks, and I've done a lot of different things because I am a prolific writer, but I love this business because it gives the person a voice who sends it to someone else.
Yes.
You know, it gives them a voice without getting thrown under the bus. So it really gives them a sense of freedom with telling the truth. And then the person who receives it, very
and
powerful for them, because powerful message. Yes. They're really kind of cute and funny. That's the whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you have a
cute
book out?
And funny. You know, I do. I have actually my most popular book is my newest one. It's called Leave a Legacy of Wisdom, a process to inspire sharing your stories, values, and insights. And because I, all of my honoring awards that people can send anonymously to lift people up, they're all about values. So they're things like, you know, lovable laughter and a spirit of kindness. And they're all really wonderful honoring awards. So because values are really important to me, what this book is, Leave a Legacy of Wisdom, it's a great $5 ebook that you can find everywhere, especially on my website. Mm-hmm. But it's so great because it asks you appreciative inquiry questions about your values. So it will ask you things like, you know, what do you appreciate most about kindness? And, you know, what gets in the way of your experiencing kindness? And if you had a story, you know, that you would like to share about kindness, I wonder what that would be. And so it walks you through a series of really great questions that brings out your inner wisdom about the different things that you value. And it's got like over 40 key questions that you can answer. And it's got over like 90 different values, like kindness and gratitude and freedom, all of those things that really are so universal.
Yeah, I think what you're doing is, go right ahead, go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I was just gonna say the cool thing, George, too, is that people love this so much, they're starting to do it in study groups. So it's like everybody gets together and they'll say, okay, well, let's work on compassion this week. Everyone answer the questions and come back next week. And so everybody shares about compassion or everybody shares about gratitude. And it's really profound because, you know, everybody gets to see and feel what everybody else has to say about a keyword like gratitude. And it's very powerful.
Yeah, I think it should be probably in every classroom, high school, grammar school. You know, I think it probably should be a part of the lesson plan, you know. So,
you know, and I think if we started teaching children at an earlier age, how wonderful would that be? And and I have to say one of the thing that actually made me want to start my Anonymous Expressions website was I had a friend who was an elementary school teacher that talked about some of these poor elementary school kids and the hard times they were having. And so I created a gifted and talented child award. And of course I had all their perfect names and their perfect mailing addresses from their teacher. And I sent out about 24. And she called me in about 5 days crying on the phone saying, you won't believe what's happened. These kids whose parents are out to lunch on drugs and alcohol and had to move in with grandma and all these challenged children got this wonderful gifted and talented child award. They don't know who sent it. It was a wonderful surprise. It's lifting their self-esteem and it's giving them something different to focus on.
Wow. That's great. I mean, this should be universal. I mean, this should be in every school. I mean, a lot of these kids need to be, you know, to know things about compassion and all of this, the things that you're talking about. So, you know, how can, let's say my son goes to a charter school. How would I convince his teachers to do something like that?
You know, one of the things I do have is I do have a free awards program for kids.
Uh-huh.
And I usually do it through these podcasts. And what I will tell people to get started is, number one, they can go to my website and look at all the awards and they can contact me and we can talk about it and I'll do whatever I can to assist them. And if it's a teacher and she wants to, you know, copy some things, whatever, I'm totally open to that. To me, it's not so much about if people pay me $13 to send a custom colorful award out to someone anonymously. It's about sharing values and, you know, putting it out there. And especially for children, you know, the other award that makes people cry and them so deeply is I have a honorary caregiver of light award. And honestly, I had a gal call me last week who was crying when I answered the business line. And finally, she said, I got the most amazing thing in the word in the mail. I got this honorary caregiver of light award. And she said, I've been taking care of my dad and my uncle for 2 years, and it's really hard, and I'm not perfect, but I do the best I can. And oh my gosh, you know, the fact that it was anonymous really touched her heart, that someone didn't know who recognized what a thankless, difficult job it was, and that she was doing it and doing it well.
Okay, give me a website where I can send it out to people so they can, the people who are, you know, who may not be listening to the show, I can send it out to them and of what you do and how beneficial it is.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate that, George. The website is anonymousexpressions.com. And it has my wonderful ebooks. I've got a oneness process on there. My Leave a Legacy of Wisdom ebook is on there. There's all kinds of great resources for people for telling the truth. And frankly, the other one, George, that's so powerful is I wrote a really power-punching, very simple poem about verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been amazing the people who have wanted to share about verbal abuse as well, anonymously.
Yeah, I'm gonna share everything that you tell me because I want people to know about this because this is more than just this is universal. I think especially the schools, the children, I think all of these this would uplift them. This would empower them a little bit more to learn something that they probably wouldn't even get at home.
You know, that's the thing that's really true about it, and especially a lot of the troubled children. They do need something to boost their self-esteem. They do need something positive to focus on, and the caregivers need to be appreciated. It's a very difficult, thankless job, and frankly, I am the big universal girl. I mean, universal values to me are what unite us and connect us. So that's why I have all these honoring awards about compassion and kindness and those kinds of qualities, and that's why my Leave a Legacy of Wisdom ebook for adults is so fabulous, because it goes through all of those universal values and asks some really profound questions that helps people to bring out their inner wisdom, bring out their stories, bring out their insights. So it brings me a lot of joy. I'm like the happiest self-employed grandma you would ever want to meet.
You sound happy. You sound content. You sound like you love what you do. And that's great. That's wonderful. Okay, tell everybody where they can find your website, where they can pick up your book. Anonymousexpression.com is your website. I'll make sure I'm going to get that out to most of the people that I know, especially in the educational industry. And we're going to see what we can do about getting some of these ideas into some of these schools, these local schools around here.
I appreciate that so much. And I am starting to work with the Boys and Girls Club after school program, which is really nice too. I think that's another venue. Sometimes the public school system is a little hard to integrate things in depending upon the open-mindedness of the teachers. But, you know, the Boys and Girls
Iris,
Club and Girls
Iris, there's nothing wrong with trying, okay?
There's nothing wrong with trying
to put our best foot forward because we're all about, you know, the children. So, I mean, if they've refused this, then that's up to them, you know. But this is something
I totally
good, I think.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Anonymous Expressions with a S, anonymousexpressions.com. And I so appreciate your enthusiasm and your support, George, very much so.
No problem. Would you like once the show ends, would you like a link of the show? So maybe you can put it on your website so people come by your site or your podcast and they can listen to you on this show, you know, talking about this wonderful, wonderful thing that you do.
I would like that very much, George. Thank you so much.
And thank you for being on the show. I hope you can come back because you've been very, very, you breathe a breath of fresh air into the show. Okay,
oh,
if I can say
that.
Thank
you so much. I appreciate that. And you keep up the good work yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. That was Iris Barrett on the George Wilder Jr. Show doing some great work out there, folks. And that's what this show is all about, is making the world a better place one show at a time. And we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep on doing it because we love what we do.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
Well, that's Bryant Gumbel. That's very, very powerful. And that's relating to some of the violence that has been going on and taking place in and around America, not just Chicago, but America. And it's sad. It's sad. And I wish President Obama, who has high approval ratings, not mine, but he has high approval ratings, I wish he would come out and speak out against some of the violence that is taking place in America. But the guy won't do it. I mean, he has a few more months left in office. So one of the greatest things he can do right now, which he should have done a long time ago, come out and speak to these young brothers and sisters about the violence that they're doing in their neighborhoods and tell them to put the guns down. Tell them to stop shooting each other, stop killing each other. I mean, it's like the Civil War sometimes, blacks shooting blacks. It's not about all the time police officers and their brutality of African Americans. It is actually black Americans taking out black Americans. And that's sad. And the president himself considers himself as being African American, and he should come out. I mean, this guy is the most powerful voice. He has the most powerful microphone in the United States. Come out and say something about the violence that's going on in his hometown of Chicago. He will not do it. We've been trying to get Obama in Chicago for the longest to go over to the south and west sides of the city. I live on the north side. Go over to the south and west sides of the city and talk to these people, you know, especially the guys with the guns and the guys in the gangs. To put down the guns, stop the killing, stop the massacres, stop all of this stuff. At least he can try. If he doesn't succeed, he can try. I mean, no, there's nothing wrong with trying. He can always say, well, I tried, but this guy doesn't try. And it's, I'm on the show almost every day talking about the violence in Chicago, talking about the violence around America, and Obama does nothing. He sits back. He'll give it lip service, but that's about it. He'll throw money at the problem, but sometimes the money is not all that should be done. I think his presence would be a very enormous presence in some of these black neighborhoods, African-American neighborhoods, where they're killing each other. And even the crime is now spreading, has spread all over the city, but not as much as it is on the south and west sides of the city. You know, I mean, you really can't say that in Chicago it's just the north and west sides of the city that are plagued with this, or the poor areas or the poverty stricken slum and ghetto areas of the city. I mean, this crime is all over the city. I mean, downtown Chicago. I mean, I don't want to scare anybody away from visiting Chicago, because it's a very, very beautiful city. It's a great place to live. It's expensive. It's damn expensive, man. It is totally expensive. And putting that aside, it's a beautiful place to live. It's a great city. And we don't want the gangbangers and the thugs and the criminals to take over the city, because they are trying. But the police, they're on the ball. I'm not with the police 100%, but they have jobs to do and they have their responsibilities. So, you know, I just wish that before Obama leaves office, that he can come over to the south and west sides of the city of Chicago and talk to these young brothers. I think, matter of fact, I probably know that would have an effect on lowering the shootings, lowering the senseless and stupid crime that happens. Because you got people in some parts of the city of Chicago who are afraid to walk down the street, who are afraid to go to the store, the park. You know, they're afraid to walk to school, afraid of walking home from school. You know, you never know what's going to happen. The gangbangers are out there looking. And I have supplied so many solutions to lowering crime on the show that it's, you know, it's repetitive, you know, because this show is not about me on a microphone or sitting at a desk with three or four computers surrounding me. And it's about making the world a better place. And I'm not joking with that. It's not just a saying. It's something that's been implemented by myself. And that's what it's all about, making the world a better place. I mean, when I have guests on the show, whether they're guests or callers, it's all about telling you, informing you of something and trying to make the world a better place. It's tough. It's hard. It may never be achieved. However, nothing beats a try. We don't try. Nothing ever happen. And I've said this before. Most people, if you want something to happen, you have to go out and make it happen. You can't sit around and hoping something great happens. You have to go out and make something great happen for yourself. You cannot sit around. Nobody's going to knock on your door and hand you a bag full of money. You're going to have to go out there and work for it and earn it. And you'll feel much better that way than having someone to actually hand you some money. You feel much better if you go out and you earn it. And that's what it's all about. It's all about making the world a better place in every way I can. And am I succeeding? I think so. Not to the point that I would like to, but I can see some changes coming. But it's going to take not just me. It's going to take all of us. I remember Michael Jackson's song, Man in the Mirror. If you want to make a change to your situation, if you want to make a change to the world, look right in the mirror and start with yourself. You know, so that's where it has to start. It has to start with you. It has to start with me. It has to start with those people over there. And maybe this thing can work. Maybe it can work. And oh, look, I'm sounding all serene and everything, but this is serious. This is very, very serious. And if I can get back to Obama, I wished he would come out and just, I'm not slamming on Obama. I have, but it's just so much you can say when somebody's not going to move. If he can just come out to these neighborhoods and just visit some of these high crime areas, not just Chicago, maybe Missouri, Detroit, Charlotte, where some of these riots have been taking place. Go talk to these brothers and sisters. Tell them to stop destroying their communities. You know, tell them to put down the guns. I mean, the thugs are out there big time. And obviously, not every thug, if you tell them to put the gun down, they are not going to do it. They are going to go out and shoot somebody just for the hell of it. So, and there's so much the police can do, you know, especially in Chicago. Some of these guys are just afraid to do anything. They're afraid to stop people. They're afraid to, to accost people on the street because of anything that they feel inside of them. It's the paperwork. The paperwork is too much. And, you know, so things have got to change. Things have got to change. And I think they will. And I think they will. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It's 6:55 straight up Chicago time. I believe it's around 70 degrees in the city of Chicago. I mean, I stepped outside this morning to drop my son off at the school bus. And it was cold. It was cold, but it seemed to have warmed up as the day went on. And it's still very, very nice. And the days are totally shorter, and that's a bummer. But we're going to have to deal with it. Okay, what else do we have? We're going to try. Yeah, there's another thing, another sad note is that the teachers are about to go on strike again. I mean, it seems like every other month in the city of Chicago, the teachers are threatening to strike. You know, the schools just open up after summer. They just back in. They're back in now. And this has just happened. And now the teachers are talking about striking. If you notice, during the summer months when the kids were on summer vacation, there weren't much talk about a strike. And they could have gone on strike while the kids were out of school. But they want to go on strike while the kids are in school so the kids can be affected by this. They're making sure that we feel it, you know. But my kid doesn't go to a public school, and I'm so proud of that. And I have nothing against public schools because I think they're some of the greatest schools ever. However, the people who are running the schools, are controlling the schools, who are controlling the money, these are some awful scoundrels, you know, because they're affecting the lives of these kids. And I said this the other day on the show, education is not what it used to be. Education today for children, I think everywhere, the education is watered down. It's not what it used to be because at some schools, not all, but some kids don't have homework. Some kids do not have books. Some kids do not have really good, some schools do not have really good quality teachers. You get these city and, if I can say it, municipalities, they're trying to save money. So they're hiring teachers now with and not paying them much. And if you're hiring teachers now and you're not paying them much, you're getting what you pay for. Unqualified teachers that do not know as much as some of the students know, or they know one grade past what the students that they're teaching. That's bad. That's bad. So the teachers in Chicago, they're going on strike sometime in November. And they are doing this so they can affect the classroom. The kid's going to be out of school. So I don't have to worry about it because my kids doesn't go to these particular schools. But I feel for those kids who are going to be out of school, out in the street, doing nothing, running up and down the street. I mean, especially in some of these high crime neighborhoods, you know, and the gangbangers are shooting. So that's a horrible thought. But these teachers, and I'm not saying all teachers are bad. Some are not. Just like some cops are bad, some cops are good. But there's always a bad apple in the barrel. The thing about these teachers that are striking, majority of these teachers who are striking, they have been given a raise, and yet they're still are going to go out and strike. Now that doesn't make sense. And then they're striking the moment school is back in from the summer. That tells you that they want to affect the children's learning, and they want to up in parents, you know. And this is crazy. They argue that they don't want to pay. The main sticking point is, folks, that these people don't want to pay toward their pension. They don't want to pay toward their pension. They don't want to pay, you know, I think it's 7% that the city is asking that these teachers pay toward their pension, and they're pissed off about it, and they don't want to pay toward the pension. Hey, wow, you and I, we pay towards Social Security. I mean, every job that I've got, I pay in to the Social Security till. You and I, you know, pay in other words, we pay toward our retirement. And these folks, these schools, these teachers, they don't want to pay toward their pension, their retirement. They don't want to pay towards that. I don't understand that. They're pissed off about that, even though they've just gotten a raise. So this is about money. This is not about the classroom. This is not about the students. This is about money in their pockets. And in order for them to not pay towards their pension, it's going to cost Mayor Rahm Emanuel to raise more taxes on top of the taxes that they have already raised and hit us hard. So if these teachers want to go on strike, go right ahead. I mean, it's not going to affect me. It's not going to affect my family. It's not going to affect anybody. You want to do it, go right ahead and do it. But I don't want to be paying towards nobody to sit at home. That's just me, you know, to sit at home. I really don't want to be paying for teachers, period, especially because a lot of them are just money grubbers. They have their houses, they have their SUVs and, you know, all of this kind of thing, and they just want more money. I just think they're greedy. It doesn't make sense. Why can't you pay towards your own pension, towards your own retirement? That's just common sense to me. And they're bitching about that, and they want it, and they're going to strike over that. Well, be my guest. Okay. And they just voted to strike. They have 95% of the teachers in the Chicago public school system voted to strike. So they will be out there, folks. So that shows you that the majority of the teachers in Chicago public schools and elsewhere, they've got their mind on more money. And so many teachers think they should be praised and put on a pedestal because they're teachers. Just like I've said, there's good teachers, there's bad teachers, there's bad police officers, there's good police officers. And it's just not right. I mean, to put the kids through this kind of thing, folks, it is just not right, at least not here. And that's what this show is all about, making the world a better place. Yeah, we had a Black Lives Matter protest around here in this area of my studio, a Black Lives Matter protest. You know, they were protesting, you know, obviously, police shootings, not in Chicago, but actually all around America, where there's a innocent young African-American shot in the back or murdered by the police. And this happens. It happens all the time. Police brutality, it happens, you know, and Obama doesn't say nothing about that. He doesn't say anything about that. I guess the guy just, you know, in his own world, you know, in his own world, he wants to play golf and he doesn't want anything whatsoever to do with this. And I just don't know. It's just
in the Middle East, we could have rebuilt our country twice. And it's really a shame. And it's politicians like Secretary Clinton that have caused this problem. Our country has tremendous problems. We're a debtor nation. We're a serious debtor nation. And we have a country that needs new roads, new tunnels, new bridges, new airports, new schools, new hospitals. And we don't have the money because it's been squandered on so many of your ideas.
Let you
and
respond
maybe
and we'll
because
next...
you haven't paid any federal income tax for a lot of years. And the other thing I think is important.
It would be squandered too, believe me.
If your main claim to be president of the United States is your business, then I think we should talk about that. You know, your campaign manager said that you built a lot of businesses on the backs of little guys. And indeed, I have met a lot of the people who were stiffed by you and your businesses, Donald. I've met dishwashers, painters, architects, glass installers, marble installers, drapery installers, like my dad was, who you refused to pay when they finished the work that you asked them to do. We have an architect in the audience who designed one of your clubhouses at one of your golf courses. It's a beautiful facility. It immediately was put to use, and you wouldn't pay what the man needed to be paid, what he was charging you.
Maybe he didn't do a good job, and I was unsatisfied with his work, which our country should do too.
Thousands of people that you have stiffed over the course of your business not deserve some kind of apology from someone who has taken their labor, taken the goods that they produced, and then refused to pay them. I can only say that I'm certainly relieved that my late father never did business with you. He provided a good middle-class life for us, but the people he worked for, he expected the bargain to be kept on both sides. And when we talk about your business, you've taken business bankruptcy 6 times. There are a lot of great business people that have never taken bankruptcy once. You call yourself the king of debt. You talk about leverage. You even at one time suggested that you would try to negotiate down the national debt of the United States. Well, sometimes there's not a direct transfer of skills from business to government, but sometimes what happened in business would be really bad for government.
That's what Mr.
And
Trump
we need
to be very clear about that.
Look, it's all words. It's all sound bites. I built an unbelievable company. Some of the greatest assets anywhere in the world, real estate assets anywhere in the world, beyond the United States, in Europe, lots of different places. It's an unbelievable company. But on occasion, 4 times, we used certain laws that are there. And when Secretary Clinton talks about people that didn't get paid, first of all, they did get paid a lot, but taking advantage of the laws of the nation. Now, if you want to change the laws, you've been there a long time, change the laws. But I take advantage of the laws of the nation because I'm running a company. My obligation right now is to do well for myself, my family, my employees, for my companies. And that's what I do. But what she doesn't say is the tens of thousands of people that are unbelievably happy and that love me. I'll give you an example. We're just opening up on Pennsylvania Avenue, right next to the White House. So if I don't get there one way, I'm going to get to Pennsylvania Avenue another. But we're opening the old post office. Under budget, ahead of schedule, saved tremendous money. I'm a year ahead of schedule. And that's what this country should be doing. We build roads and they cost 2 and 3 and 4 times what they're supposed to cost. We buy products for our military and they come in at costs that are so far above what they were supposed to be because we don't have people that know what they're doing. When we look at the budget is bad to a large extent because we have people that have no idea as to what to do and how to buy. The Trump International is way under budget and way ahead of schedule, and we should be able to do that for our
country. Well, we're well behind schedule, so I want to move to our next segment. We move into our next segment talking about America's direction, and let's start by talking about race. The share of Americans who say race relations are bad in this country is the highest it's been in decades, much of it amplified by shootings of African Americans by police, as we've seen recently in Charlotte and Tulsa. Race has been a big issue in this campaign, and one of you is going to have to bridge a very wide and bitter gap. So how do you heal the divide? Secretary Clinton, you get 2 minutes on this.
Well, you're right. Race remains a significant challenge in our country. Unfortunately, race still determines too much, often determines where people live, determines what kind of education in their public schools they can get, and yes, it determines how they're treated in the criminal justice system. We've just seen those two tragic examples in both Tulsa and Charlotte. And we've got to do several things at the same time. We have to restore trust between communities.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was a little bit of clip from the last night's debate, which was, I don't know, questionable. You know, I don't think anybody's mind was changed that quickly or anything on each. I think Trump still has his supporters. Hillary still has her supporters. And some of the people who are still on not sure who to vote for, they may be going towards Hillary Clinton. Who knows? But anyway, it was a spirited debate. We can't wait for the debate coming on the 9th of October. That should be a little bit more spirited. Some people are trying to say Donald Trump is going to try to get out of it. That's something remain to be seen. All right, let's go to the phones. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up? What's on your mind?
Not much. Just listening to you. I guess you wanted to speak about the debate. So, I mean, I guess we heard what we expected to hear. Two people playing, you know, their cards at the table. Trump had the tone issues that I thought he would. Anytime you're having a back and forth with a woman, if you're raising your voice or interrupting her, it's going to seem like you're trying to intimidate or bully the woman. And I don't know how that's going to look, you know, optically to people. I thought that would happen, and it did. Hillary was, you know, real, I don't know, I would say closed off in the way that she approached everything. But she was, you know, typical Hillary. She's not a good politician. She's not very charismatic. But she was up against somebody who doesn't have a good grasp of foreign policy or anything as far as, you know, depth when it comes to, you know, how the sausage is made. So she kept trying to pivot to that. Trump kept trying to pivot to her record. So, you know, it was that kind of thing. Really, go ahead. I was going to say more people probably should have watched the football game. But go ahead.
maybe. I was going to say I was shocked that Trump seemed to be so unprepared for this. I mean, he was winging it. He was like, he was just reaching for anything to say, especially toward the end of the debate. He was becoming unhinged. He was just, you know, I mean, he actually gave the debate, I think, to Hillary.
Yeah, but ask yourself this, though. If you're the guy preparing him, would you try to shove a bunch of information into him and try to get him to stay on talking points? Or would you just give him attacking points and try to always pivot back to your strength, which is, you know, being verbose, being loud, and speaking of, you know, the deficiencies of your opponent. So I think they were in a, you know, they were in a catch 22. You try to shove too much information into him, he might have gotten robotic and kept repeating the same talking points and, you know, wouldn't have been able to expand. So, I mean, this is like preparing with Sarah Palin or something. You know what I mean? Like,
the amount
that he doesn't know is vast.
I mean, totally. But, you know, Trump is Trump. They probably actually told him that he needed to prepare. Why doesn't he want to prepare? Trump, I'm pretty sure, probably said, I'm Donald Trump. I don't need to prepare. I'm just going to wing this thing. And I think he screwed this up. But, you know, I'm thinking the next debate he's going to be maybe a little bit more prepared than he was at this debate.
Yeah, and then I guess the elephant is in the room is outcome doesn't really matter for him. His base is dug in, they're entrenched. They'll
spin totally
the
agree.
Story any way that to justify it to themselves. And to a certain extent, the people on Hillary's side will assume every allegation that he brings up is a lie. They won't actually look at Hillary's record and see that, you know, there's a whole lot there that even when he brings it up, there's some truth to it. I mean, she has a substantial record of being a horrible person. So, I mean, all of that is on the table.
Yeah, I totally agree because I'm on the fence too because, you know, I don't trust Hillary. She done lied quite a bit, and Trump is to me is totally unfit for office. And what do you do? What do you do? I mean, you have this dilemma where you don't think either candidate is fit for office, but you got to hold your nose and vote for somebody.
Hey, man, I'm going to keep up with my tradition of voting for losers. So I'll be voting for a third party candidate who has no chance of winning.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I keep my integrity and I am not responsible for electing either of these people. So that's what I'm going to do.
All right. Thank you for your call.
All right, man. Thanks for letting me on.
Bye bye. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are going to be right back. Let's see what we can do. We have a clip over there, something that we can do let's try this one.
Not to applaud tricks from the poli sci-fi movie The Manchurian Candidate too loudly, but anybody notice that days later, we aren't debating whether or not Trump supporters are deplorable. We're debating how many of them are.
Every few generations, we Americans are called upon to defend our country. to defend it not so much from foreign dictators or war or terrorism, but from those here who have no commitment to progress or democracy or representative government, no commitment to anything except their own out-of-control minds and the bottomless pits of their egos. Our society has thrown up these people before. Joseph McCarthy, George Wallace, Father Coughlin, Jefferson Davis, Aaron Burr, the Know-Nothings, the Blacklisters, the America Firsters, and we have always thrown them out. And now our generation has its own, the most dangerous individual ever nominated by a major party for the highest office in this country. His base wants few details and fewer facts. They just want to burn it down and blame their failures on the collective other. And Donald John Trump is their demonic messiah in Oompa Loompa's clothing. We must stop him. It is not pleasant. It is not fair that we have to do this, but it is our turn. The average report in this series will ask for about 6 minutes of your time. This one needs nearly three times as much. The text version includes more than 160 links. I encourage you to read and save, because the emperor's new clothes quality to the Trump campaign has survived these 15 months, because as we react to each outrage, our shock and revulsion has been refracted like light through a prism. But these outrages are not separate events, not even a pattern. They are simply Donald Trump. Seen all at once, they and he are horrifying, and you must see them all at once. Thus, in brief, the story so far. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked the Pope, who attacked John McCain for being captured by the North Vietnamese, who attacked Gold Star parents, Khazir and Ghazala Khan, and then juxtaposed their names with the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, who attacked Hillary Clinton as a, quote, bigot, who attacked her as brainwashed, as unhinged, as a monster, as the devil, as the most corrupt candidate ever, showing her face on piles of $100 bills and the Star of David, who attacked her as someone who Second Amendment people should do something about, as someone whose religion we don't know anything about, after he had explained he had never asked God for forgiveness, who attacked President Obama and implied he was a traitor, who attacked him as having been complicit in the Orlando terrorist attack, who attacked him for having lower approval ratings than Vladimir Putin, as if Putin's approval ratings could somehow be trusted, who attacked him as being born in another country, who attacked him as the founder of ISIS, then said that was sarcasm, then said it wasn't sarcasm, then attacked him again as the founder of ISIS, who attacked Carly Fiorina for her face, Hillary Clinton for her non-presidential look, Heidi Cruz for her appearance, Megyn Kelly for having blood coming out of her wherever, Mika Brzezinski as crazy and very dumb, neurotic, not very bright, who attacked the women who accused Roger Ailes of harassment, who attacked the women who choose abortion, and who said there should be punishments, who attacked a New York Times reporter because he had a condition that made his arms look atypical, who attacked Judge Gonzalo Curiel because he was of Mexican descent, who attacked Senator Elizabeth Warren over allegedly lying over her heritage to get into Harvard when she never went to Harvard, who attacked Senator Jeff Flake by saying he will not be reelected this year when Senator Flake is not up for reelection until 2018. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked U.S. troops in Iraq and claimed they stole millions, who has attacked Ted Cruz's father and claimed he was connected to the assassination of President Kennedy, attacked Bill Clinton and claimed he was a rapist, who attacked Mexicans as rapists, bringing drugs and crime, who attacked African Americans and claimed they were all living in poverty with no jobs and schools that were no good, who attacked Harrisburg, Pennsylvania as a war zone, and attacked the United States of America and claimed it is in a, quote, death spiral. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who lied about opposing the war in Iraq when there is a tape of him supporting it, a tape recorded on the first anniversary of 9/11, who lied about opposing the war in Iraq during a speech in which he insisted, "I will never lie to you," who lied about $6 million in charitable donations to veterans groups from his telethon, who lied about donating his profits from The Apprentice, about charitable donations from The Celebrity Apprentice, from Trump the Game, and to St. Jude Cancer Center, who lied about a plan to debate Bernie Sanders for charity, who lied about why he would not release his taxes because he was being audited, and then proved himself a liar
by saying he would release his taxes if Secretary Clinton released emails, who lied about how much money his father gave him, helping him to get out of college, who lied about sending his private jet to ferry stranded U.S. servicemen, who lied about talking to the Attorney General of Florida, who declined to investigate Trump University after she had been given a campaign donation, who lied about his business in Russia, who lied about meeting Russian President Putin, who lied about offering child care to his employees when it was child care for his hotel guests, who lied about some people wanting a moment of silence for the murderer of five Dallas policemen, who lied about seeing thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrating 9/11, who lied about 9/11 hijackers sending their wives and girlfriends home to Saudi Arabia, who lied about thousands of Syrian refugee terrorists being secretly admitted to this country, who lied about the Chicago police urging him to cancel a rally, who lied about the Chicago police saying they could solve crime there with tough police tactics, who lied about how there was no drought in California, how he never said Japan should have nuclear weapons, how he opposed the ouster of Egyptian President Mubarak, how the unemployment rate is 42%. Who lied about ISIS making millions a week in selling Libyan oil, who lied about dozens of secret terrorist cases in this country, who lied that a protester who tried to rush onto his stage had ties to ISIS, who lied last May and again last week about refugees entering this country carrying cell phones with ISIS flags on them and phone plans prepaid by ISIS. Can you hear me?
All right. Early voting is about to start in the city of Chicago later on this week. Early voting. So if you are registered in the city of Chicago and probably elsewhere around America, you will be eligible for early voting. And early voting usually goes toward the Democrats. Early voting, Republicans don't like that. And I'm hearing that in some, I'm hearing bits and pieces about some judge in the city of Chicago has enacted some sort of pretense, if I can say pretense, in trying to suppress the voters in the city of Chicago. And city leaders and politicians are out, Democratic politicians, city leaders are out trying to change that. That's been a Republican nomer for a long time, suppressing the vote, suppressing your vote, trying to make sure that you do not get out there and vote, because they know if you vote, that will keep them out of office. They know that if you do not vote, the Republicans will be voted in office. And they will retain their seats. So there's no doubt about it. I mean, I know you've heard about voter suppression around a country forever, and it's real. And now it's happening in the city of Chicago. And we're going to do everything we can to overturn this awful, awful law that they've trying to put on the voters of the city of Chicago, because they don't want us to vote. We're going to vote, jackasses, and you're not going to stop us. We are going to vote, and we're going to vote to make sure you do not get in office, to keep your ass out of office. We are going to vote. There's no doubt about that.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Heaven help us all. Heaven help us all.
a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep. Keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.
All right, we're back. We're just about off the air. I want to thank my guest, Iris Barrett, and I want to thank my callers. Thank you, guys. You were great as always. And someone just whispered in my ear 60 seconds, so we got 60 seconds to to try to say thanks, everybody. Thank you for your kind thoughts. Thank you for your adulations of the show, and thank you for downloading and reading my books and short stories. That stuff is hard work. I have more stuff coming out in 2017, so look for that. And I love what I'm doing. As I was telling Iris and a lot of my other guests, you have to, whatever you're doing, you got to have fun doing it. You have to have fun doing it, because if you don't have fun doing it, why do it? Why do it? All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. It's going to be another fun day. And we're going to try. I don't think I have any guests tomorrow, but that'll be okay. All right. Goodbye, everybody. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. Take care.
So awful because he was given a defective microphone.